Your industry is unique. It faces its own challenges and risks that set it apart. That means choosing just any insurance company just won't cut it. At The Hartford, we take pride in knowing the ins and outs of your industry and help provide solutions that suit how you do business. From liability and property insurance to workers' comp and more. At The Hartford, we don't just talk about specialization, we live it. Learn how The Hartford can help your business at thehartford.com.
Collaborate for a greener future at the Bloomberg Green Festival, a groundbreaking celebration of the thinkers, doers, and innovators leading the way. From design and culture to technology, science, and entertainment. Hear from inspirational speakers and immerse yourself in climate solutions, July 10th through 13th in Seattle. Title sponsor, Amazon. Official airline, Alaska Airlines. Get 20% off using promo code RADIO20 at BloombergLive.com/Green Festival.
This is Bloomberg Business Week. I'm Carol Masser.
And I'm Jason Kelly. We're right here every day bringing you the latest news from the worlds of business and finance.
Plus technology, politics, economics, all harnessing the power of Business Week reporters and editors.
And of course, Carol, that's part of a team of 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries.
And Jason, you can download Bloomberg Business Week on iTunes, SoundCloud, or Bloomberg.com.
You can also listen to our radio show at 2 p.m. Eastern on Bloomberg Radio every weekday.
Or watch us on YouTube by searching Bloomberg Global News.
A lot going on, and a lot going on when it relates to the virus. We have to keep track of this. We just talked about testing, but there are so many issues around this that we need to explore. We're happy to have with us Dr. Tangela Purnell, Associate Director of Johns Hopkins Urban Health Institute, joining us on the phone from Baltimore. Of course, part of the Johns Hopkins family is the Bloomberg School of Public Health, and that is supported by Mike Bloomberg, the founder of Bloomberg Philanthropies, and Bloomberg LP, the parent of this radio station. Dr. Purnell, really nice to have you with us. And listen, we talk about the virus every day, 19 different ways, because we have to. It has invaded all of our lives, whether we've been directly touched by it or whether we've been fortunate enough to not be directly touched by it, but it's affecting all of our worlds. And one of the things that we have really come to learn is that it does not affect everyone in the same way. And so much of it is determined by the disparities that already exist when it comes to healthcare. Help us understand the work that you and your team are doing.
I first would like to thank both of you for having me here. It is indeed an honor to be able to talk about, you know, some of our work. And so, as you correctly alluded to, this is a problem worldwide, but in particular, this is a problem for the exact same disadvantaged populations that are typically the same population that you see experiencing health disparities and health inequities from a variety of different causes. So, you know, we at the Johns Hopkins Urban Health Institute and also at the Center for Health Equity, we have a series of different approaches to try and tackle this problem. So obviously, we do research that involves vulnerable populations. We do this work in conjunction with our community and the patient stakeholder partners who actually have a voice at the table and helping to really help us design, implement, and also disseminate our findings. Another approach is really our education and training. Unfortunately, we know that all of these problems and these disparities are truly just rooted in generational inequities, and it won't be all fixed. Unfortunately, it doesn't appear that it will all be fixed in one generation. And so another thing that we really focus on is really training the next generation of health equity researchers or public health practitioners so that we can make sure that this work continues so that the gains that we achieve, you know, we'll also be able to keep those gains.
Dr. Purnell, I think we wonder too, like, it's interesting. One of the stories we're focusing on, Jason and I were just talking about it, that, you know, Abbott coming out and saying they've got, you know, a 15-minute test for the virus and getting ready to ramp it up, right? And we've talked about how we need to have systems in place that help us get control of the virus for everyone. And I do wonder, we've had lots of conversations, certainly because of this pandemic, about the inequalities in terms of access to healthcare and good healthcare among different communities. So what things, as you say, you talk with people in these communities, they've got a place at the table, what needs to be done? And I do wonder, are there things coming out of this crisis, whether it's telemedicine or other things, that will make a difference?
Absolutely. So I think that, you know, this answer is twofold. So first of all, in terms of access to testing, you're absolutely right, you know, in saying that we know that there's not equal access. And in particular, even as we get these advances in technology, for example, rapid testing, we also know that the dissemination of this is not equal among different communities, in particular the communities that were already disadvantaged. So I think that one of the things that we need to keep in mind is that as we are trying novel approaches to really get this virus under control, we have to think about, well, what are the structural barriers to people who are living, for example, in neighborhoods that don't have easy access to testing? We need to think about things like not necessarily requiring cars. Think about at the beginning of this, many people had to have a car to drive up to get tested. We need to think about things like, are people able to get tested as they are asymptomatic? Are people able to get tested without a physician prescription? So all of these things could really be a barrier to people who are already disadvantaged by this system. And then, you know, in terms of thinking about longer term, what we need to do within these communities, I think we really need to take a look at this and realize that COVID-19 is not some magical unicorn that just came out of nowhere and then all of a sudden disproportionately impacted certain groups of people. What it did was really open our eyes to the fact, you know, more mainstream, that there are pockets of society who have not been properly taken care of by society. And we need to be committed to the long-term work of addressing these structural barriers so that the next virus or the next whatever
right.
won't continue
right.
to be the thing that keeps happening. You know, enough is enough with this.
Right, right. Well,
I agree.
A lot has been laid bare, and we really appreciate the work that you are doing. And, you know, here's hoping that as it has been laid bare and we all become more focused on it, we'll be working towards some real solutions. Thank you so much, Dr. Tangela Purnell, Associate Director at the Johns Hopkins Urban Health Institute, joining us on the phone from Baltimore.
This is Bloomberg Business Week with Carol Masser and Jason Kelly on Bloomberg Radio.
We want to dig into this week's issue because there's a terrific series of stories all about the world of gaming, video games. We've talked about it a lot on this show, but I feel like during the pandemic, everything has changed, and maybe good news for some in this business. Jason Schreier is a tech reporter for Bloomberg. He joins us on the phone from Westchester. Lovely Westchester. I'm here too. Joel Weber, he is the editor of Bloomberg Business Week. He joins us from Massachusetts. All right, J-Dub, set this up for us. You're not a big gamer, are you? I don't see you as a gamer.
Well, everybody touches it probably a little bit more than they admit.
Joel. You're among friends.
You know, in the West, we really think about gaming, I think, as being something that's sort of console-based.
Yes.
But obviously, smartphones have really changed that because, you know, you pull up a Robinhood app and it feels like you're a gamer. So, you know, what we're really seeing, though, is this year – this industry has just been on a tear. It's crushing it. And basically any company that has any gaming anywhere in its portfolio is just up. And some of these are way up. And, you know, that's a phenomenon that we had sort of been watching. But at the same time, like as this industry has boomed, it's also really exposed these kind of lingering issues and almost like a darker side. And we have an amazing reporter in Jason, who was among the cast of characters that we tapped for this cover package. Jason, what was some of the stuff that you wanted to make sure that we expressed in these stories?
Yeah, so as these companies are just exploding and booming and seeing their stocks hit record highs, there are parts of the story that the game companies don't want people to know. One of those big topics that we hit in this cover package is the world of permatemps, which is kind of an epidemic problem in the tech world and also very much applies to gaming. There are a lot of gaming companies out there that rely on contractors to do what should be full-time work, what seems like full-time work, what would be full-time work if not for the fact that their badges were different and they didn't get bonuses or invites to holiday parties. So that is one of the issues. We also talked a little bit about the epidemic sexism issues that are kind of prominent throughout the video game industry, among other things.
Well, and what's interesting, Jason, too, oh, go ahead. No, go ahead, Joel.
Jason, let's talk about some of the companies that have obviously been in the headlines and really, you know, capitalizing on this moment. And, you know, obviously there's the whole Epic Fortnite thing, and that's sort of leads to a whole other world about, you know, companies that are, you know, the big tech companies that are warring with each other. But what are some of the other companies that you think are particularly owning this moment?
Yeah, we've seen huge stock leaps in Activision Blizzard, EA, Nintendo especially has really seized the moment. It happened that they got really lucky with their new game Animal Crossing, which is kind of this simulation game in which you play as a fun, like cartoony little dude or lady on an island full of animals, and you can kind of like live out this village and play with your neighbors, kind of pretend that you can actually hang out with your neighbors and see people in person. So that came out just as the pandemic was starting, so it was perfect timing for them, and they have already hit remarkable sales. They sold over 22 million copies of Animal Crossing in just a few months, which is already, it's one of the best-selling games ever because of that.
So, Jason, are they on track to kind of continue this big boom, or time will tell, or there are some questions about kind of the outlook here?
Yeah, there are a lot of big questions, because actually this year was primed to be a pretty big year for gaming even before the pandemic, before we even knew what coronavirus was, because there are two new consoles coming out this fall, the new PlayStation and the new Xbox, and we are entering what the gaming world refers to as a new console generation, which is the type of thing that happens once every 7 or 8 years or so. So this is a pretty monumental event for the gaming world, and we kind of are seeing the future of gaming come out this fall. So there are all sorts of questions about the new Xbox and PlayStation and how well they'll sell. We happen to also be in an economic recession, and a lot of people are out of work and don't have the disposable income that they did. Right. So a lot of big questions remaining, like how many people are going to be able to buy a new $500 console this fall? That is one of the big questions that we won't know until November, December or so.
And who has the edge with the new consoles, or do we know yet? Does it remain to be seen?
Yeah, well, so it's interesting. I think both of these, we have Sony on one side of things and Microsoft on the one side of things, but they've kind of both adopted completely different strategies, so they're not even really competing against one another anymore. In some ways they are, and they're doing the whole marketing warfare, like who has the most powerful console, and you see a lot of tweets, a lot of snarky tweets from their marketing people. But really, Sony is still playing the same game that they always have. They're going after exclusive games. They're putting all this money, millions and millions of dollars into games that you can only play on the PlayStation 5. Microsoft is taking a completely new approach, and they are adopting, they have put a lot of money, and my colleague Dina Bass wrote a great story about this for the magazine, they put a lot of money into what's called Xbox Game Pass, which is essentially Netflix for video games. You pay $10 a month and you can get access to a whole bunch of games. And they seem to care a lot more about that than they do about selling the new console, because they're trying to put their games on as many platforms as possible. They don't have the same sort of exclusive strategy that Sony does. So if I had to predict, if I had to put on my prognostication hat, I would say that PlayStation sells more, but Xbox might be better positioned for the future as people kind of get more accustomed to platforms rather than dedicated consoles.
All right, Jason Schreiber, we're going to leave it there. Thank you so much, tech reporter for Bloomberg, joining us on the phone from New York. Our thanks as well to Joel Weber, the editor of Bloomberg Business Week. He joined us from Massachusetts. Check out that cover package. It is really terrific, as Jason Schreiber said, a whole bunch of people coming together around this. They are featured in the new issue of the magazine that is available at Bloomberg.com and the Bloomberg Terminal as well.
Your industry is unique. It faces its own challenges and risks that set it apart. That means choosing just any insurance company just won't cut it. You need a company with extensive experience in specialized insurance. At The Hartford, we take pride in knowing the ins and outs of your industry and helping provide coverage that suits your needs. The Hartford offers insurance solutions that help mid to large-sized businesses, like yours, effectively manage risk, from liability and property insurance to workers' comp and more. With extensive experience in underwriting, risk engineering services, and claims, The Hartford goes beyond the expected to deliver innovative, customizable solutions and service that your industry, that your business demands. At The Hartford, we don't just talk about specialization, we live it. Learn how The Hartford can help your business at thehartford.com.
Success is more than the final destination. It's a path you take one step at a time. It's discipline, it's teamwork, and it's the drive and passion inside of us that comes before all recognition. It's what Stifel's been doing for over 130 years. Quietly, yet strategically, Stifel's become one of the fastest growing wealth management and investment banking firms in the country. Our financial advisors go beyond traditional wealth management to provide clients with direct access to one of the industry's largest equity research franchises and a leading middle market investment bank. Because success is the drive it takes to keep climbing, the passion to keep investing, the best of each of us made better by the best in all of us. And that is where success meets success. Start your journey at Stifel.com. That's Stifel.com.
Stifel Nicholas and Company Incorporated, member SIPC and NYSE.
You know success when you see it. Or you think you do. The people in the spotlight. Athletes, actors, artists. But what about the people behind the scenes? You know, the ones who make it all happen. The lighting engineers, the sideline photographers, the caterers. They're small business masterminds. And if there's one thing they have in common, it's making their money work harder. That's why they have a business bank account with QuickBooks Money, where they are now earning a generous 5% annual percentage yield. Yes, 5% APY. Making your money work as hard as you do? That's how you business differently. Learn more about QuickBooks Money at quickbooks.com/5APY. Banking services provided by Green Dot Bank, member FDIC. Only funds and envelopes earn APY. APY can change at any time.
So, Jason, our most read story on the Bloomberg, it's about Fed Chair Jay Powell unveiling a new approach to setting U.S. monetary policy, letting inflation and employment run higher in a shift that will likely keep interest rates low for years to come. We talked about this with Mike McKee at the top of our broadcast. It's really all part of our economic reality and one where many have searched to describe this particular recovery. In today's Business Week Economics, we've got one perspective on this, and it is gaining momentum. It's called the K-shaped recovery, first written about, I think, in June by Peter Atwater. He's adjunct professor and lecturer of economics at William & Mary. He joins us on the phone from Pennsylvania. I am so delighted, we both are, that you are here. We've been doing a little bit of a Twitter conversation, but tell us about your observations of the economy, Peter, and how you came to this, because it really does tell the story of what's been going on because of the virus, because of the so many, you know, inequalities that has kind of laid bare again.
Sure. Thank you, Carol. So I watched the world through the lens of confidence, and beginning in March, I noticed something really interesting. We all panicked together. You could see the collapse in confidence being spread across the entire economy. Everybody felt it the same way. But the migration of people, professionals, to the work-from-home environment put them very quickly on stable ground, and you could see their confidence start to rebound, where out into the real economy, you know, small businesses, people working in the travel industry, it was very clear that they were not on solid ground. In fact, for many of them, you could start to see conditions getting worse. And at some point in April, I started writing about it, and on Twitter, somebody was talking about all the different letters and mentioned the letter K, and I thought, this is perfect. This is exactly what we're seeing, is that for some in the economy, things are improving, and for others, the deterioration has just been this very painful decline.
And so, Peter, how much of this is new and how much of it is exacerbating things that were already there?
So I think if you were to step back and look at the recovery from the banking crisis, that itself was very much a K-shaped recovery. You know, the financial markets took off very quickly as the Fed went into overdrive. But, you know, one of the things that came out earlier today in the statements from Chairman Powell and others is that it took until very late in the cycle for the benefits of all of that trickle down to reach low-income Americans. And so I think we've had this prolonged 10-year K-shaped recovery that has now been compounded by a very sharp rebound for some, and it's just others are left hanging.
So is this our world, our new world economic reality, Peter, in that we're just going to have K recoveries? Or can we, you know, as you said, the trickle down, the benefits trickle down very late, you know, coming off the financial crisis. How do we get it so that the benefits get to everybody sooner on?
So I think one of the things that we need to recognize is that from an economic perspective, we have to ensure that there is support for those at the low end because we know that this condition lasts, that it takes a long period of time. And in that process, I think Congress made a valiant effort, but the attention to the relief efforts for the pandemic, they were really oriented around a mindset that this was temporary. And so, unfortunately, those that were, you know, the beneficiaries of that, they started as early as late May beginning to wonder, is this coming to an end? And from a confidence perspective, we need certainty. They need to know that these support mechanisms are going to be in place until employment comes back.
So, Peter, as we think about a K-shaped recovery going forward, what's the difference, the inflection point, or the chances, I'm giving you so many scenarios here, that it becomes just a K-shaped economy?
I think we're reaching a point where it has become so obvious that that almost prevents it from happening. You know, if I look around in the financial markets, you see an extraordinary divide between big business and small business. You see it in individuals. You see it in so many levels that you have stacked inequity on one end and stacked privilege on the other. And my sense is that much of this is we're already seeing manifest in the social unrest around the country. There's clear resonance to that sense of inequity. And, you know, even people who can't articulate it feel that there is something unjust about the system as it exists today. And so I think this is even much more of a social K issue as it is an economic one. And I think, you know, policymakers and leaders of business need to recognize that that lack of confidence, that sense of hopelessness that many on the leg of the K are feeling is now motivating people to respond.
So, Peter, you know, it's interesting that you say that. I have conversations with my young nieces who are in their 20s, you know, like, God, capitalism is terrible. I'm like, no, it builds things. It also provides, you know, this is, you know, where people can have opportunities to build a company from nothing and then give back, you know. So there are a lot of pluses to it. But yes, it has created some massive inequalities in our systems. I am curious about some of the conversations you're having at William and Mary. And what are the policies from your perspective as you study this that you think will make a difference, will reduce those gaps that currently exist in our society and have for a while and have just been building and getting wider and wider?
I think one of the things that has to be looked at is, you know, at the root of this in many ways goes back to the early 1980s with that notion of shareholder primacy, that the shareholder came first. And as much as we want to enjoy the benefits of capitalism, I think that that pendulum has shifted to such an extreme, and you saw it in news reports yesterday. You know, Salesforce announces, you know, record earnings, stock price soars, and at the same time, 10,000 employees to be laid off. That's a very mixed message from capitalism.
Right. Well, so what is it, you know, Business Roundtable has come out and said, okay, there's multiple, you know, parties that matter, constituents that we have to think about. But I don't know. It's a lot of talk, and I want to see whether or not things change.
Change change start to happen. I mean, if you were to just look at, you know, look at the NBA last night being forced to respond to, you know, the social issues as they're manifesting around us.
Yeah, I wonder, and I'm glad you said that. I wondered what you made of that, because there are, as you well know, a lot of economics underneath the big business of sports, the NBA and beyond, and you have seen those issues collide in a really big way.
Yeah, and you know, if we go back to the outbreak, you know, we forget that the NBA, that the Utah Jazz being infected with the virus, that was a critical tipping point in sentiment. Mm-hmm. And I look to what's happened this week in much the same way, that suddenly this feels very real to people, this collective sense of inequity.
Yeah, March 11th. I mean, that will be the – it's interesting you say that, because March 11th was the day that the NBA shut down, also the day that we learned that Tom Hanks and Rita Wilson had the coronavirus. It all happened on the same day, I believe. I'm pretty sure I have that right.
You do.
That changed everything.
It was a game changer, right? It was a game changer.
But that speaks to – sorry, that speaks to this whole notion of confidence that you're talking about, and perception plays into that, Peter.
It's entirely perception-based, and it relates to our perceptions of certainty and control. And if you think about those that are on this leg of this K-shaped recovery, they feel as if they have neither. They are voiceless, powerless, and the future feels very unclear. And that's such a difference to those on the arm.
Hey, Peter, just have about 30 seconds. Do you have hope that we can change, especially when a lot of these folks don't have a place at the table?
I do have hope. I think that there are ways for us to bring back a greater sense of equity. But it's going to require, you know, collective sacrifice.
Yeah.
But remember, these are many of these are essential workers. You know, these are food providers, healthcare providers. They're critical to the system overall.
All right, we have to leave it there. And I've got to say, this is something where I read something that Joe Weisenthal wrote. Then I went to Twitter and I found Peter, and I'm so glad. And I hope he comes back.
I think we have a new member of our gang. I'm just going to say
it. I think we do. Peter Atwater, he's adjunct professor of economics at William & Mary, joining us on the phone from Pennsylvania. Check out his writings on a K-shaped recovery. It's really, really smart. This is Bloomberg.
Your industry is unique. It faces its own challenges and risks that set it apart. That means choosing just any insurance company just won't cut it. You need a company with extensive experience in specialized insurance. At The Hartford, we take pride in knowing the ins and outs of your industry and helping provide coverage that suits your needs. The Hartford offers insurance solutions that help mid to large-sized businesses, like yours, effectively manage risk, from liability and property insurance to workers' comp and more. With extensive experience in underwriting, risk engineering services, and claims, The Hartford goes beyond the expected to deliver innovative, customizable solutions and service that your industry, that your business, demands. At The Hartford, we don't just talk about specialization, we live it. Learn how The Hartford can help your business at thehartford.com.
Hi, I'm Ron Kraszewski, Chairman and CEO of Stifel. Financial advisors, if you're not growing your practice, you're losing market share. Stifel is a growing, entrepreneurial, advisor-centric firm built for successful advisors like you. Imagine having the resources of the largest wirehouses and the support of the boutique shops, but none of the bureaucracy to get in the way of you serving your clients. At Stifel, it's your business, your book, your clients. I always tell the advisors we're recruiting, I want you to come to Stifel and double or triple your business. Most of them laugh and shake their heads, but I'm serious. Don't take it from me. Take it from Stifel's number one finish in J.D. Power's 2023 U.S. Financial Advisor Satisfaction Study. So there's a reason why 148 financial advisors joined Stifel last year. Come join us and find out why Stifel is the firm where success meets success. Visit www.choosestifel.com.
Stifel Nicolaus & Company Incorporated, member SIPC and NYSE.
You know success when you see it. Or you think you do. The people in the spotlight. Athletes, actors, artists. But what about the people behind the scenes? You know, the ones who make it all happen. The lighting engineers, the sideline photographers, the caterers. They're small business masterminds. And if there's one thing they have in common, it's making their money work harder.
That's why they have a business bank account with QuickBooks Money, where they are now earning a generous 5% annual percentage yield. Yes, 5% APY. Making your money work as hard as you do? That's how you business differently. Learn more about QuickBooks Money at quickbooks.com/5APY. Banking services provided by Green Dot Bank, member FDIC. Only funds and envelopes earn APY. APY can change at any time.
I'm driving in my car. I turn on the radio.
Yeah, how about you let me drive?
Oh, no.
Who's gonna drive you home?
Honey, please, I'll do the driving.
Drive on.
Excuse me, I want to drive.
Just drive, baby.
It's the question that drives us.
This is the Drive to the Close.
That funky music will drive us till the dawn.
On Bloomberg Radio.
And it is time for the Drive to the Close. And we talked about our gang earlier. Love the fact that this guy is part of our gang. Part of the reason, he's a super nice guy. The other part, he's really good at his job.
Totally.
I have to say, one of the top performing fund managers in his category. Talking about Eric Clark, portfolio manager for Rational Dynamic Brands Fund, joining us on the phone from San Diego. Eric, how are you? It's been a minute, as the kids say, and I wonder how you're doing there in Southern California. It's been wild.
Jason, I'm doing great. It has been wild. Thankfully, the fires aren't where they are up in L.A., but we're doing okay. I can tell you that if you asked me March 1st if we would have been sitting here with this kind of market, with these kinds of returns, I would have said that's absolutely impossible.
Yeah.
Well, you know, it's interesting. I feel like this speaks to, we had a conversation with Peter Atwater at William & Mary, this K-shaped recovery, and this whole idea that there are some that are doing fine in this pandemic and this shutdown, others who are not. Just like there are big companies who've been able to access the capital markets and have enough money to shore up their businesses, small businesses, it's a tougher story. We know that. So when you look at brands, Eric, are you starting to look at it through kind of the post-pandemic lens, or those that have actually done well here in terms of your portfolio?
Well, we're certainly clustered in the things that have what I call a lot of business model flexibility, which is what helped them, kind of recover and even thrive in some cases better than others. I will tell you that I'm certainly looking for ideas in the recovery basket. I'm frankly just a little bit cautious about the recovery and its sustainability. I'm not so sure we're not going to see another spike in the virus, maybe in the fall when the flu season starts. And then we have the volatility around elections. So I just feel like the market has gone straight up since March 23rd, and now we just need to chop around a little bit and work off some of this overbought and the sentiment. But I still like the models that are very flexible, that, you know, if you want to buy something and you're in an important category and you're the relevant brand,
right,
you can do it whether it's in the store or online.
Well, and that notion of flexibility and adaptability, I think, is really important. And I think about a conversation that's actually featured in the magazine this week that Carol and I had with the CEO of Blue Apron, Linda Kozlowski. And, you know, she was talking about how they are working under this assumption that even when we get to whatever the next normal is going to be, behavior will be changed. And those companies that were able to adapt during this period may continue to see some strength, and maybe that strength accelerates. And as I look at some of the names you like, whether it's Lululemon, which I always ask you about and am fascinated by, as you know, Nvidia, Baba, Twitter, Netflix, I mean, they all seem to have those characteristics of they've been able to figure this out and also have positioned themselves to do well with whatever comes next.
Yeah, I mean, you know, consumers are fickle, but now, you know, when they become loyal to you for whatever reason, you really have to mess up on a regular basis to push them away. And so I think for the e-commerce users will just continue to do what they were doing. The people who weren't big e-commerce users are probably going to do more of that now that they've seen how easy it is. And you know, the spending that we've been doing has been in much more narrow cases with, you know, with home improvements, or, you know, we're stuck in our homes, so we want to upgrade our homes and home furnishings, and we want to order things online. and we're exercising more because we have more time, and so we like the Lululemon. And I love the Lulu buying the mirror. We bought a mirror. I don't know if you guys have one. There is enormous potential for that mirror in the Lulu stores.
Really? Tell me about the mirror. I don't have one, but Carol
so
and I both
cool.
have Pelotons. But I know
cool.
a lot about it. But tell me how it is as a user.
It's amazing. So you know it's a stand up mirror. So you get a chance to kind of see what you're doing with the exercises. You have this hologram of your instructor, and they have like 70 different classes. I mean, they're building new classes every day. Different, you know, one could be stretch, one could be yoga, one could be boxing. So you essentially can get all of the things that you need from an exercise perspective right there with your own personal coach when you want it, how you want it. And it's intuitive. It learns. You know, I filled out a profile, and in the middle of my exercises, it actually gave me an alternative exercise because I told it I had bad knees.
Hmm.
I mean,
this
thing is going to learn over time with your habits. And so it's intriguing as a new business model for Lulu, even when the current business model is just crushing it right now.
We need to have them on, Jason, because we really need to talk about
it.
Hey, Eric, I have to ask you, Abbott Labs is in your portfolio. You must feel pretty good today.
Well, I would love to say that I did. I actually sold it like a dum-dum because the stock broke down a little bit, and we looked, and, you know, we're pretty active. So I didn't give it enough time. And so I'm happy for Abbott shareholders. I am a little skeptical of how this whole thing's going to work. I mean, I'm going to have to get a test every day now just to feel comfortable. But, you know, baby steps, right? I think this is super helpful and probably why a lot of the recovery stocks are doing well today.
Oh, my apologies. I think it was then maybe the end of the most recent quarter or something that it had listed as a holding. Well, sorry for you.
Yeah, we recently sold it.
Sorry about that.
Eric, talk a little bit about Netflix, because I feel like people are fascinated by that, especially as some of the other streamers, especially from the more traditional media world like Disney, have come on. You still like Netflix here?
I still love Netflix. You know, I think it's one of those things, and maybe this is just my family, but when we turn on the television, we got rid of cable long ago. When we turn on television, we see our Roku interface,
mm-hmm.
and then we look and decide which streamer we want to go to. And 9 out of 10 times, the first place we go is Netflix. That's the first place we search for content.
Hmm.
And so Netflix has become the cable. That's where we start. And if we can't find anything in Netflix, then maybe we move on to Amazon Prime, or maybe there's the show Billions on Showtime or whatever the case is. So I just feel like, yes, the U.S. is very penetrated. The non-U.S. is still very underpenetrated. I do believe they have pricing power because it's still cheap. Churn is going to stay low. So I love the name, even though it's pretty expensive. So it's got a huge position.
All right. Let's not make it so long before we catch up with you again. Really good to hear your voice. Eric Clark, Portfolio Manager, Rational and Dynamic Brands Fund, getting in shape in San Diego with his
mirror.
Cool. He already was, but interesting to hear that endorsement. This is Bloomberg. Thanks so much for listening to Bloomberg Business Week. Download the podcast on iTunes, SoundCloud, Bloomberg.com, or wherever you get your podcasts.
And of course, you can always listen to our radio show at 2 p.m. Eastern on Bloomberg Radio, or watch us on YouTube by searching Bloomberg Global News.
Your industry is unique. It faces its own challenges and risks that set it apart. That means choosing just any insurance company just won't cut it. At The Hartford, we take pride in knowing the ins and outs of your industry and help provide solutions that suit how you do business, from liability and property insurance to workers' comp and more. At The Hartford, we don't just talk about specialization, we live it. Learn how The Hartford can help your business at thehartford.com.
Collaborate for a greener future at the Bloomberg Green Festival, a groundbreaking celebration of the thinkers, doers, and innovators leading the way, from design and culture to technology, science, and entertainment. Hear from inspirational speakers and immerse yourself in climate solutions, July 10th through 13th in Seattle. Title sponsor, Amazon. Official airline, Alaska Airlines. Get 20% off using promo code RADIO20 at BloombergLive.com/greenfestival.